Okay, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Very good evening. Very good afternoon to you all. Peace be upon all of you. Selamat petang. Okay, thank you, Mr. Shariman. Okay, as our chair for our session this afternoon. And I would thank ISIS Malaysia, okay, for this generous invitation, which has been in the pipeline for more than a year now, since I met Dr. Hezri, who's now the CEO of LADA, okay, in Langkawi, when he was in ISIS. Last year I met him at a conference at University of Malaya when we were both speakers, and the keynote speaker was the ex-foreign minister, okay, Syed Hamid Alba. Then it just happened later that I was selected by IIUM to become Syed Hamid's external examiner for his master's thesis, where he actually wrote on the downfall of UMNO from Ibn Khaldun's theory of Asabiyah. A very interesting thesis. Okay, anyway, I'm here to speak on the threat of violent extremism, but I must make it clear here that my subject has to do mainly with Muslim extremists, because that is my so-called expertise. Okay, I wouldn't be speaking about the LTTE, although that's the latest scare. Okay, of this problem of terrorism in Malaysia. But seeing the faces of the audience, I know people who have fieldwork experience in Sri Lanka, probably they can later help me to speak about problems of terrorism, okay, among other communities, because I come from a background of a political scientist trained in the West, and I focus more on Muslim societies and also societies that live among Muslim peoples. I've written about Middle Eastern Christians, for instance, not Malaysian Christians, but Middle Eastern Christians, okay, and published in a book called The Oxford Handbook of Christianity in Asia. Okay, so that will be my focus, without denying that violent extremism or terrorism can of course. Okay, it's something that transcends religious, ethnic, or racial boundaries. And then there's also the question of violent extremism. Okay, is violent extremism the problem, or is it extremism? So is non-violent extremism okay? Okay, this is something that we have to think. Even I, suddenly an email, just got an email call for papers from Routledge. Well, we are producing a handbook on non-violent extremism in parts of the world. So is it okay? Okay, or is extremism itself a problem which needs to be nipped in the bud? Okay, and what about radicalism, radicalization? There's something in the literature which is called RIVE, radicalization into violent extremism. So is radicalization into extremism okay? Okay, these are some of the issues which might become important, okay, as we go along my presentation or my slides. So, I have put in red font here, Islamist violence, okay, and Islamist means Islamist with an S-T, not a C, okay. And I've also put in red Sufi-based remedies. This is also something which people have asked. And I'm quite clear in my writings for those who have followed, those who have read them or followed them, okay, that I have defended the Sufi heritage of Malaysian Islam. Okay, and I have argued, okay, that the decline of Sufism, okay, is one of the causes of the rise of extremism. Okay, In terms of conceptualization, Islam as a faith and Islamism is the ideology, and the adjectives are different. Okay, whenever I write, okay, when it's MIC, Islamic, it refers to Islam as a faith. Okay, but whenever I refer to Islamism as an ideology, it has an IST at the back. And sometimes many journalists or many other writers who are not initiated in the field might confuse this. They might very carelessly mix up between terms Muslim, Islam, and Islamist. Okay, Western political scientists are a bit more circumspect, okay, in this respect. Okay, so Islamism as an ideology means it can be contested. Muslims won't criticize Islam, but Islam as a faith, something which is from revealed knowledge, from wahyu. Okay, but Islamism is something different. Whether a state, okay, is based on a monarchy or a democratic setup, okay, or whatever sort of governance, that is something which is contested. And different Muslim ulama or statesmen have come up with different theories on how to organize a state. And two main pillars of Islamism, if you look into the literature, the Islamic State, not ISIS, but the Islamic State, the concept of the Islamic State, and Sharia is the law of the land. So whenever the word Islamist is mentioned, okay, political considerations dominate. Now, on the same vein, you can distinguish, for instance, Hinduism and Hindu nationalism. You need to differentiate that. Okay, at the layman level, unfortunately, people seem to just collapse between the two, or mix between the two. And they become very anti-Hindu, although the culprit might be Hindu nationalism. Similarly with Judaism and Zionism. Okay, in fact, our prime minister was accused of having mixed between the two when he was lambasting Jews. Whereas what he meant was more probably the Zionists. I think it was his talk at Cambridge, okay, recently. And also there's a difference between mainstream Christianity and evangelical Christianity. Yeah, one might be more militant than the other. You can look at the writing by Terence Chong, okay, a friend of mine at ISIS Singapore. He said that people as scholars have neglected studying evangelical Christianity because whenever scholars of politics and religion write on South Asia, their attention has been on Islam. Okay, suddenly there's not sort of threat, but another phenomenon happening which okay, people haven't realized. Okay. In fact, I've got a very good friend, a Christian, in a university in Malaysia, fellow professor, who's told me, just discussing between me and him, he said he's very worried. I'm a mainstream Christian. He said, I've been a Christian all my life, and I don't know what these evangelicals are preaching. It's not the Christianity that I knew. A very good friend and a very well-known professor. You probably, if I mention his name, I mean, most of you would know him. Okay, but anyway, so because this is on post-Malaysia Baharu, the situation. So I'll recap a bit on what was the prevailing situation before Malaysia Baharu. This is from the Pew Research, okay, and it's quite well known that notorious for Malaysia, probably, that Malaysia has a high level of radicalization. In fact, in terms of what the Pew Research suggests, the fourth highest, okay, in terms of support for ISIS. This is ISIS, the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. It's quite surreal speaking about ISIS in ISIS, Malaysia. So. Okay, Merdeka Center Regional Survey on Extremism and Tolerance. I was involved in some of the questionnaire. Okay, and if we look at some of the results, yeah, this is just a sample. Okay, male, female respondents. I speak with the permission of Ibrahim, of my friend Ben Sofian. Okay, the director of Merdeka Center. And that's one slide, okay, from the several results that they got. You can look at the vast difference between the Muslim respondents in Malaysia and Indonesia, whether terrorism is a problem or not. 1.2% Malaysians are worried about terrorism, but 24%. Okay, Indonesians are worried. So vast difference. And actually, despite being serumpun of one Malay stock, there are several more contrasts. Okay, if you look into the eschatological beliefs on in the coming of the end of time, also very vast difference. Okay, from the Pew Research also said the same thing. Okay, but anyway, what is so peculiar then about the Malaysian case? Low level of violence, hardly any violence. Okay, if we contrast it with Indonesia, even the Movida bombing in 2016 was something very big for us. They, despite a very high level of radicalization. Okay, in fact, if adjusted to population, more Malaysians have joined Syrian-based violent extremist movements, not just ISIS, Jabhat Nusra, Ajnas Syam, and so on. Okay, with several splinter groups. Because people conflate this. For instance, Lutfi Arifin, who was covered by New York Times, he never joined ISIS. This is from E8. And you can read an article by Ahmad Mohammadi also. He never joined ISIS. It was actually Jabhat Nusra and then several other splinter groups. Okay, but people keep on conflicting, but keep on assuming that whenever people go to Syria, it's for ISIS. There are several groups which are fighting and killing each other. Okay, and if you, I leave these slides to ISIS. If you look at the first link there, just click it later when you get these slides. It's a slide showing, it's a video of Malay extremists in action in Syria. There's no slaughtering, no violence. Okay, it's just Malay militants telling us what are they doing, okay, in Syria and so on. And half of those in that video are dead. Okay, some have been brought back home and are being de-radicalized. So we look at the writings of Joseph Liao, for instance, said the same thing about this is a conundrum. Okay, being low in violence but high in radicalization. And I refer you to another article by Nicholas Chan, USM graduate, doing his PhD in Cambridge, okay, in violent in extremism. On this Islamic State versus Malaysian Islamic State versus Islamic State. In fact, Joseph Liao has got a very good article published in Contemporary Southeast Asia, okay, early this year, explaining why we expect from the high level of radicalization more people joining ISIS. But why have people not been flocking to ISIS from Malaysia? Okay, the answer is in the state policies, the Malaysian version of the Islamic State, okay, which might be extremist as well. Okay, so this a report of the Merdeka Center findings, and a lot of feedback that I got from many Malay Muslims were not happy with this. Okay, especially for those of you who read Mandarin Chinese. Okay, I think there's the conflation between this, whether it's Muslim, Islamic, Islamic. Okay, so a lot of blame, okay, has been put on Islam, okay, based on the reports which came out in the vernacular press. And this survey was actually quoted in the BRI cartoon book, you know, where Lim Guang Eng had the foreword. Okay, the Superman hero actually quoted from this report, not from the press report, okay, but from the Merdeka Center report. Okay, after Malaysia Baru. Okay, can I refer you to an article just published, okay, by Kajian Malaysia, Journal of Malaysian Studies, and of course I know which articles will come out or won't come out because I'm the chief editor. now. So this just came out in Bahasa Melayu, okay, in Bahasa Malaysia. Sample 5232, three sectors. It's mainly defense and security, education, general public. They divided, okay, the sample, all Malay Muslims, and these three researchers, including Prof. Kamal Nizam, well-known scholar at University of Utara Malaysia, friend also. Okay, they also conducted 60 focus group discussions, okay, between relatively young people, 20 to 45. I don't know who amongst us would be included, okay, if you're still young. Okay, so what is the main conclusion of this study? The more ignorant one is about Islam, the higher the chances, okay, one getting influenced by ISIS. So the level of joining ISIS, okay, actually is related, very much related, positively related to one's level of ignorance, okay, in Islam. And this debunks actually the theory that, you know, with more madrasas and so on, there'll be more radicals, except of course if the madrasas themselves embrace extremist ideology. But the worrying thing about this is that if you look at the figures, okay, down there, okay, about 100 sangat setuju, 380. So the total figure comes about 10% of those surveyed actually espoused what ISIS stands for. After all, despite all these things happening, and these are potential troublemakers because they include people who are in sector pendidikan, education, okay, what about our kids, our children, and those who are in the security sector, okay, anggota keselamatan, some police. Okay, and okay, we know about the case of still unsolved case of the missing people, okay, Pastor Koh and Amri. So it doesn't deny that among various sensitive sectors we have in this country, there are people who very openly, when surveyed, say that they support ISIS. Okay, although about 10%. If anything flares up in this country, it will be from this very minority group, okay, but potential troublemakers. So what I would like to hypothesize, and doesn't matter if you don't agree with me, okay, because I look at what other people have surveyed and so on, I come with a theory. This is what theories do. This is what some scholars do. It doesn't matter if you disagree and so on, and you can write things which rebut, okay, my arguments. I would like to say that this backlash that we are seeing, this Malay-Muslim backlash, okay, it leads to a culture of silence, okay, among the Malay Muslims. You get it over social media and so on, to the extent of legitimizing or even vindicating some militants or potential militants or terrorists. Okay, now this is very, very dangerous. I say here that extremism creeps into the Malay Muslim subconscious mentality. Okay, because once reservations are expressed, okay, against militants, okay, terrorists, especially those who aim at the non-Malays as the other, okay, who perhaps deserve to be victimized for many different reasons that they think, okay, then if anybody, okay, expresses reservations or disagreements, then they are branded traitors. Okay, as I myself have experience in some Malay-centric groups. Okay, so you just end up shutting up. Okay, and This, I think, has been accentuated by this global Islamophobia current. Okay, and I refer you, for instance, an article, short article by Nathaniel Tan in The Star. Okay, he wrote on Abim and Ikram. Okay, and he was saying that Islamophobia is a very real thing, not just in Malaysia, but globally. Okay, many Bosnian Muslims, if you have read lately, are very dissatisfied with the Nobel Literature Laureate, okay, going to a Serb writer who actually denied that there was any massacre, okay, in Bosnia-Herzegovina, including the Srebrenica massacre in 1995. And suddenly he got the Nobel Literature Prize. So this Islamophobia is a real thing, and one center at the University of California, Berkeley, is actually focusing on Islamophobia. So let's see some examples of social media postings, very incendiary, very inflammatory, and very worrying. Okay, this question of opposing the present government, Pakatan Harapan, because it's seen imposing siege on Malay Muslims or endangering Islam, and these sort of incendiary postings, okay, are everywhere. Okay, if you dare to go into the social media, even for instance the right one, it comes from the writer or the person who posted this is not some layman. Okay, he's a head of a pass in one state, okay, for instance. So influential people who can influence people. And equating, okay, for instance, what happened previously, communist danger, okay, and comparing that, okay, with DAP, okay, with the present government, and even with Parti Amanah. Despite Parti Amanah themselves being Muslims, even ex-PAS members. So let's see what I mean by vindicating some of these militants, or even terrorists. And violent extremism has happened. I refer all of you to the case in Penang on 24th September. Okay, I remember this very much. I was out because I was away on duty for USM. I had I was outstation, and then these messages came flooding in, especially from Penang-centric groups. Okay, so the case of a factory employee who hacked to death. He didn't die instantly, the superior Indian lady, okay, who allegedly blasphemed Prophet Muhammad, and this person came back later, okay, with a samurai sword and just hacked two non-Muslim supervisors. Okay, he was laid off temporarily before that, and the police came. He was surrounded. He actually fought with the police, and he was shot dead. And these are not people without work and so on. What many people do not know is this particular worker who died was a middle-class Malay. You wouldn't expect him to act like this. And the father is still an academic at a Malaysian university. I won't say what post, okay, he or she holds. People don't know this. Okay, and I wouldn't say. So he's not from, say, a lower class background. No. Cool. He's the son of a lecturer. Okay, so I'm copying here. I've pasted here the examples of messages that you get. This is a syuhada. Okay, mati ditembak disebabkan beliau mengamuk terhadap dua orang kafir harbi. So this term kafir harbi, when you get it from some religious people, those with official religious posts and so on, using them irresponsibly. So it becomes familiarized in public domain, and people just use it as a justification that, okay, you can just kill people. You would never imagine that this would happen in Malaysia, but it has happened. Okay, unfortunately, and one life is lost. Whether there was blasphemy or not, okay, as far as I'm concerned, there's rule of law in this country. There are ways to act, okay, on this, and not just by hacking people's head. Remember that it might happen one day to people who we know. These are people perhaps we don't know. Okay, and not just to non-Muslims, so even to Muslims, who these extremists excommunicate themselves and think that these Muslims are non-Muslims. Okay, so because of the apostasy, perhaps they could just be executed at will. So when I made some comments that, you know, you need to look into the case and so on, and the response below is what I myself got. Okay? Kita ni kalau jenis pengecut, janganlah duk hina orang berani buktikan kecintaan sebenar kepada Allah dan Rasul. This is a response to what I wrote in one group. Okay, after this example happened. So, ilmu tinggi tapi bab jihad penakut. Say you are a professor or PhD, but you are a coward. This is what the impression, okay, that unfortunately some Malay Muslims, okay, have been have been adopting, not really embracing, but adopting or subscribing to. Okay, and this is what you get even in the media. Even Putri Amnu saying the same thing. This is Shahid. Remember, Shahid being a martyr in Islam is something very big. Okay, youth, okay, will do everything to get a Shahid. It's a confirmed, it's a guaranteed confirmation of paradise. And on the left, okay, some of the excerpts that they get from books legitimizing or vindicating what they do. For instance, the statement from Sayyidina Umar, okay, the companion of the Prophet, siapa yang mencaci Allah atau mencaci salah seorang Nabi, maka bunuhlah dia. Okay, now, without any contextualization, you interpret something like this and you can just go on killing lots of people. Not just one person. Okay, let's take another case. You know, there was a white posting. Okay, there was an instance of a very widely disseminated posting of the wife of one Muhammad Zulkifli Shafi'i, okay, who channeled funds to Akil Zainal in Syria. Akil Zainal was a militant, and who has perished together with his family, two little kids and wife in Syria. They died earlier this year. Okay, but a posting disseminated over Facebook and over WhatsApp and so on, saying that, you know, because of just donating 200 RM, ringgit, to a militant, so you got jailed. Is this fair? So SOSMA is tyrannical. For instance, the response that I copied from one response, Facebook response, and said, oh, we need to look at 86 tahanan Muslim yang telah difitnah dengan zalim. Okay, who has been slandered, okay, and tyrannized. Okay, and I've included here the lawyer's posting. Now, he himself admitted that Muhammad Zulkifli Shafi'i admitted that he knew, even though it's RM200, some of the money could be funneled to buying weapons. And the critical conversation, okay, if anybody here gets nabbed, for instance, by the police, and your handphone, okay, gets impounded, it'd be forensically, okay, put to examination, all your conversations and so on. Perhaps even if you've deleted it, okay, the reason one. So, jika ada lebihan duit, bagilah lebih sikit, boleh saya guna untuk beli senjata. So, Zulkifli's reply, insyaAllah, that is a sign of affirmation. Okay, it was with knowledge. Okay, but of course, in the original FB posting by the wife, this wasn't stated. So you get lots of sympathy. Okay, from society that, oh, this sosma is cruel, porta is cruel, all Malay Muslims are being victimized, nothing is being done about the LTTE, okay, for instance. And then there's the case of Siti Aisyah Atam. And look at some of the postings, eh, posted on the right. Whereas Guna Sekaran was actually freed from only two accusations, which was redundant. Okay, the charges. Okay, but not actually totally freed. But the impression given to, especially the Malay Muslim society, was very much different. And we read all in the press that the case was finalized and she was prosecuted just because of books. Yes, okay, we wouldn't deny that. I wouldn't deny that. But if you have context, that I have dealt with a certain cases, I've helped with the E8, okay, on analyzing evidence and on writing expert testimonies on what of on some of these militants or extremists. So we know the evidence. It wasn't just books. For the court, yes. Because E8, we look at what is the best evidence to prosecute. Okay, but on this particular case, it involved actually communication with ISIS elements with Mahmoud Ahmad, deceased in the Philippines, who was her ex-supervisor at University of Malaya. There was communication, everything was examined. Okay, so even though again the what society wants to believe, the reality is very, very much different, and the police can't reveal everything in the press. But I can say, and I confirmed just yesterday on this case, I confirmed with E8 just yesterday, that Bai'ah was involved. Okay, pledge of loyalty. So what if it's only books? Even if it's only books, it's still very dangerous. Okay, this Rafiuddin, also deceased, radicalized through books, admitted by the press. And one of the books which I myself examined, and I've written testimony on it in court, written by Abdullah Azam, and several copies of this book, it's like a Bible for militants, extremists in Malaysia, in Indonesia. And if we know Abdullah Azam, he doesn't accept jihad, whether it's economic jihad, or political jihad. Jihad is killing. Killing, how? Through weapons, sharp weapons, senjata, knife. Stated specifically, and I copy this verbatim, from his book. You can get the slides later. And let me give you just another example, my last one. This, again, widely viral message on Imam Samudra's allegedly fresh corpse when his graveyard was supposedly moved out to another location. And this was denied, openly denied, even by the police of Republic Indonesia. But this keeps on being viral. Now even just last week, my wife was asking, because she got it in our Taman group. I don't know how many times Imam Samudra's graveyard is being transferred. So many times. Last year, I got the same thing. This year, some people are still viring the same thing. Even the family of Imam Samudra actually denied this. So this is just what I've been saying in a lot of my presentations. I've been given the notice by our Mr. Chairman. And whenever I speak on this subject, I've spoken a bit on the civilizational approach, the emphasizing of the teaching of spirituality, or the South, not necessarily in terms of joining a tariqat, but the principles of it, okay, and teaching of critical philosophy. And some of these are, alhamdulillah, I think, being adopted by the government. Implementation-wise, okay, perhaps it needs to be improved. But I know for one that people like Mazli Malik, okay, even though we have differences of opinions, he reads my stuff because he's a political scientist. I don't know whether after becoming minister he still reads them, but before becoming minister, when he was at IIM, he reads my stuff because he quotes my papers in his own writings. And I know for one also that Mujahid Yusof Rawa also reads my stuff. So if some of these get into national policy, alhamdulillah. Okay, but if it, I mean, doesn't mean it doesn't matter, because I think the scholars, I mean, our duty is to write and try to disseminate our thoughts. Okay, and I write mostly at the international level, and on this Sufi thing, for instance, can I also just sort of promote book published in 2020 in advance, published by Routledge, Cultural Fusion of Sufi Islam. Okay, and there's a, okay, it's on Sufism, and there's a chapter in this by me and my former student, okay, who did her PhD at USM. It's on Asmaul Husna, the names of God, okay, the names of God, and how to implement or practice it at a practical level in politics, because political science or politics, that's my field. So some of us have, when we say Sufis, okay, we have the impression of people who fly, okay, or who have, you know, miracles, karama. No, not that. Okay, I discuss here something which is practical, okay, which can be implemented in our very professions. And the roots, okay, of akhlaq, okay, is from tasawwuf, okay, or Sufism. So that will be a case which can be contested, okay, I believe. Okay, with that, I think I will end what I have to say. Thanks.
Thank you, man.